Welcome to CSIS. My name is Peter DeShazo. I'm the director of the Americas program here. The Americas program and the energy program are delighted to have with us today Alvaro Rios Roca, who is the executive secretary of the Latin American Energy Association, OLADE. We'll be here to talk about OLADE, the work that OLADE does, and the energy situation in Latin America, certainly a topic that is one of the most important these days in just about any country in the region, one in which a great deal is being said, many studies undergoing, important issues at stake. So I think this will be a subject that all of us will be very much interested in. Executive Secretary Rios Roca is Bolivian, was Minister of Hydrocarbons in Bolivia, was elected as Executive Secretary of OLADE for a three-year term. He has studied chemical engineering, which is his background in the United States, and is a very well-respected writer and advisor on energy and other important issues. Before we start, so that Mr. Rios knows who we are, I wonder if we could go around the room and introduce ourselves. If you could please state who you are and the organization that you represent. Perhaps we could start with our colleagues here in the energy program at CSIS.
I am Sarah Ladislaw. I'm a fellow with the energy program here at CSIS.
I'm Frank Verastro, director of the energy program at CSIS.
Howard Wiarda from CSIS.
Nestor Riqueda, an associate press reporter for Latin America.
Thank you very much, everyone. Are we ready to go on the technical side? All set? Great. Okay. Well, it's my pleasure then to introduce Mr. Alvaro Rios Roca.
Well, I thank you all of you for the invitation, and hope whatever we bring from the OLADE and my perspective of the energy situation in the region brings you some ideas for debate and thought, and contributes to a worried world that goes around us. I was just sharing that we had in our webpage for some time a voting system that said, would you rather not have energy or would you rather not have health services for a year? If you can think, the majority voted that they would rather have energy. So that was very interesting. So we're concerned because we cannot have health if we don't have energy at this time. And so we're all concerned of the energy future, security of supply that is more tight throughout the world right now, and high demands throughout the world. And for our region in particular, some of our countries do have plenty of supply, but some others don't. So integration for us becomes an issue, and I am going to gear part of this little presentation I brought for you, so we can you can see how beneficial integration is if we can politically understand each other and that's so difficult sometimes among us human beings. But with that, I would like to start. For those of you who are not too familiar with the organization, is that OLADE is it's made up of 26 energy ministries of Latin America and the Caribbean countries. The energy ministers are my counterparts, my bosses, if you like, and I report directly to them. We do have about 60, 65 people in the organization, most of them very technically oriented. And we do, of course, have four pillars under which we work. The first, we don't carry the institutionality, but we do, of course, through the energy ministers, launch or promote political and technical sub-regional and regional integration. This is mainly geared to natural gas and electricity, as you would see. We carry in all studies, we carry the only official statistics of the region, and that's shared with most of the energy organizations around the world. So whatever you use and you've been using from the International Energy Agency, from Eurostat, from all the institutions around the world, we provide them the data that we collect from our member countries on a timely yearly fashion. I will, with that in mind, I will deliver to CIS here our 2005 statistical report, which also includes 2018 forecasting for our countries that you will see. We are in short supply of gas in the Southern Cone. So we do have some problems as well as everybody does, and I hope that's useful to you.
Thank you.
And we will. We also, another pillar is we provide training to our member countries, mainly energy ministries of the region. That's what we do on a timely fashion. And more often now, we have just installed last August a video conference system with all of our member countries. And from OLADE, and from somewhere else in the world, we train almost daily. Probably at this time, there is training going on for our ministries on a timely fashion. And this is very important because you do have to understand that when privatizations came through the region, private companies came very strong. They took away the best people that were in the state companies and that were around. And the most of the countries were left around with very little statistical, with very little planning tools, with very little to discuss these things. So I think we're trying to rebuild what was went through the ministries, and they were left out with no background to negotiate or to have good information systems, good planning tools, good energy balances, so they can know where they were heading. So this was a mistake of the program of the changes, structural changes that we're launching. This is one of the problems we see, because, for example, Colombia, Costa Rica, and Mexico are the three countries that have very well energy balances in place. They have very good statistics, very good and very good planning tools. But the rest of the countries, some of them do have more than others, but most of the countries are very, very infant in doing that. And you can see that is because when the reforms, the privatization reforms were implemented, everything was stalled for the private sector to come in, but not everything was stalled for the public sector or the ministries or the regulatory bodies to really have information and things in place to control and maneuver strong private companies that came through. So we are developing very strongly. I said we just have this video conference system in which we are doing that capacity building again, which is very, very important to run energy policies. I just spent a few days at DOE here, and I was amazed of the amount of information and data that the United States has. And so one of the goals we're doing, for example, now is we're promoting in every country to provide a law that enables authorities to collect information. It's not in the law in most of the member countries. So that's amazing. How can you run a country? How can you develop an energy well-balanced system? And how can you plan 25 years ahead if you don't have a mandate legal to collect data? That's, I mean, and that's something, some of the things OLADE is helping its member countries at this stage. And going back to the last pillar of the column of OLADE, it's to promote energy cooperation among member countries. Some of the countries, especially the bigger ones, have developed some good experiences or good skills, like biofuels from Brazil, is just to give you an example, or Trinidad and Tobago on developing value-added natural gas to their production, doing some methanol and doing some fertilizers. So it's just give you good examples. Or Argentina in the compressed natural gas industry, which is one of the world leaders. You can see their compressors and their natural gas systems installed in many vehicles around the world. So the region has some technological some technology that has driven and some good experiences, and that's the last pillar that you see there. Okay, can we go on to the next one, please? In OLADE, we do have, and as you have seen, the region during the 1970s was, of course, in mainly with vertically integrated energy companies. During the 90s, early 80s, late 80s and early 90s, a wave of privatization came through the region, and certainly we're at a different stage. We think that now we're going to have two things working side by side, and that's what we're trying to do. We do, in every single country, including all from Cuba down to Mexico, up to Mexico, down to Argentina, they all welcome private investment, and that's very much true. They think the private investment brings risk their own capital. They need to have profitability. They need to have a lot of social responsibility and corporate citizenship when they come and work in the region, technical contribution, and mainly protect the environment. But on the other side, the state should also have planning and regulating role, strong planning and regulating role. I mean, if you think that Chile and Argentina are short of supply of gas, it's not because it was well planned. It was because, I mean, four companies there built a lot of pipes and built a lot of things with no planning. So, I mean, the states are there to regulate long-term security of supply, and if a country does not have enough, it shouldn't be building pipelines to the neighboring country. So that just creates a lot of problems. And another trend we have in the region is it will be very difficult to see somebody privatizing any more state oil enterprises or companies, and the trend is to make them more strong. But in order to do that, we need to make them competitive. We need to make them very efficient, sometimes away from the finance ministers, so they can be very well run. So this is a program OLADE is working on, because these state oil companies will not disappear. They're there, and the people and the governments want to maintain them. So we should make them modern, efficient, competitive, so they can partner with the private companies around the world. That's the best for all of us. We should also provide a stable legal framework. Let the companies have private investments, have recuperate their investment, and let them also have profits. That's what they're for. And the country should worry about security of supply. Private investment is not concerned about security of supply. They're concerned about profits. So government should be concerned of security of supply. And finally, also, the protection to the environment is also a deal of the states. So that's the vision that most, I would say, all of the member countries of OLADE have of the energy sector for the next 15, 20 years. Who knows further along what would happen, but that's the 20-year vision that we have. I'll talk a little bit about integration in the region and its benefits, and that's why I'm trying very hard, my ministers, to look at what we have done in the past year and a half, the studies we have made. And as you can see, those are the grid of natural gas going out, especially in the southern cone, quite well developed. a lot of it with private efforts, some with public efforts, and you can see that there is not integration, but you can see a lot of some infrastructure in place, mainly in bilateral relationships. So if we think this is a low scenario, because this will come later when the following slides come, we can see that if we go to the next one, please, we can see there's a number of projects that are being discussed at this moment, okay? And this is all true. Some of them may realize, some of them are being built right now, like the pipeline between Colombia and Venezuela has been built at this moment. I think late this year, another pipeline between Bolivia and Argentina will be built. I think next year, the pipeline to Brazil between Bolivia and Brazil will be enhanced. I think there's strong studies to take natural gas from northern Peru to Ecuador at this stage. If a little bit more discoveries are found in Peru, those will be taken down to northern Chile. And as you can see, there is the pipeline that you heard from Venezuela down to the southern cone is not a lunatic project, I would call. We have to give it some credit because it will be built in phases. And as you can see from our 2018 forecast study, there's not enough gas to supply the growing Argentinian demand that has a 51-52% energy matrix based in natural gas. Brazil, that is going to demand double its demand within the next 5 or 6 years. So where is that gas going to come from? If it comes from overseas, it has a cost. So we will look at that in a little bit. And same thing in electricity. In electricity, this is the current interconnection grid that we have. And as you know, the Andean countries there have a common ground, Decision 536, which is common rules for all the Andean countries. And also on the north, between the Central American countries, the CEPAC system also has a common rules for establishing an integrated electric market. So I would say that in electricity, the Andean countries have established a legal framework, and also the Caribbean or the Central American countries have established. The rest are bilateral agreements. Go to the next one, please. Again, as in natural gas, there is a number of projects being developed, studied, or being planned because there is demand. And as you can see, and I will take a little time on this slide, these energetic resources for our, this is actually 2005, it hasn't changed much. Our hydroelectric potential, we're probably one of the most favorite regions with hydroelectric potential. Almost every country in Latin America has hydro potential still to go. We have only used 26% of our hydro potential, and so 74% is available. And the reason, one of the reasons it hasn't been developed in the past 8, 9, 10 years is because private investment does not like hydro. And the reason is very particular. I wouldn't like it either, because it takes 20 years to recuperate it. It's a much larger investment per megawatt unit, and so it takes more risk. So, but now all the planning that is being placed in Brazil and most of the countries is going to be again driven towards getting more hydro potential in the region. Also, our renewable energy potential is great. You know, Latin America is agriculture based. We have only used 4.2% of our potential. Studies show that this is the only thing we have used to now. We do have a lot of oil dispersed in mainly in Venezuela, as you know, and we have 31 years to supply. We had the current 2005 production levels. We have 31 years for natural gas, and of course there's plenty of coal, mainly in Colombia, to develop. So what I would say is that the region as itself is quite sufficient if it would work more on energy integration. And what I would like to say here is that the natural gas is quite well dispersed. I mean, there's gas in Argentina, there's gas in Chile, there's gas in Brazil, there's gas in Bolivia, there's gas in Peru, there's gas in Colombia. And it should be a well-balanced system if we can really would tend to work on a more integrated system with more common ground rules. go to the next, please. This is a study done by SEER. This is the, I would say, the institution that agglutinates most of the electric companies in Latin America, and mainly in South America. And they have done a study that if we will invest very moderately, $1,250 million for interconnections towards a consolidation of an electric market and in the different subregions, with an exchange of 60 terawatt hours by 2010, we should receive benefits of integration of $1,000 million per year. So if we look this towards 2018, we should be working on about $15,000 million worth of economical benefit that goes to the region competitiveness. And if we go to the next one, please. Same thing, Olade has completed in September of last year a gas demand study with a low and high. You've seen the high in gas, all those blue pipelines that were painted, and low scenario, mainly as we are right now. And the difference in volume between these two scenarios is a difference in growth of almost 1.3%, so to 2018. So we see that the difference of volume is 692 billion cubic meters of gas. Go to the next one, please. And if we really do an analysis of how the region could be so beneficial, we're talking about right now of bringing natural gas into Chile, bringing natural gas from Indonesia. You all know that natural gas is in a very tight supply, and it's difficult and it's costly to transport. So if we look at transport costs, and Brazil and Chile and Mexico and everybody imports natural gas, and the countries that do have it internally export it, it takes $3 to $4 a million BTUs to export it, and it takes $3 to $4 million BTUs to import it. But if we do a regional pipeline from Bolivia to Brazil, or from Colombia to Central America, or from Venezuela to Central America, it just costed $1 or $2 to ship it. So if we take the difference of those $1 or $2 for pipeline transportation, we have net savings or net economical benefits of $2 a million BTUs times the scenarios that we did, it's about $90 billion to 2018. So you can consider that this is pretty significant for a region that size, and that money can stay within the country instead of being built in ships. Okay. So based with this analysis is that we had our ministerial meeting in Mexico City 8th of September last year, and we presented all these studies to our ministers, and so they gave us two ministerial decisions that were signed in order for Olade to support its member countries in working more strongly in common rules to develop legal framework for pipeline, gas, natural gas pipelines, and also electricity integration by subregions. You will see that in a minute. And also they give us a decision that we can act as a friendly mediator, we call a conciliator. How do you say that in English? Un conciliador. Somebody that mediates when there's energy integration problems. We didn't have an instance like that, and we're already working on that. Ecuador, Colombia, and Peru have an energy integration matrix there, and Ecuador is not happy with it. So in the next 45 days, we're going to have the regulators meet at Olade to adjust the rules that we have. That's our job, and that's what we will be doing. Okay, so those are things. Now with this, I will go into what we pretend to do, and how do we see the region as far as energy integration. Go to the next one, please. Like I said, the region is energy self-sufficient, but not all countries have. So integration is the way to go, and that will guarantee security of supply in the region, integration with natural gas, electricity, and we can liberate some oil for export purposes. High oil prices motivate even more development of electricity and natural gas markets that pass through the integration process. the region needs more rules, common rules, and we need a common I would say regulations over that go beyond one country to promote investment and long-term security of supply. And during our last ministerial meeting, that's what we've been asked for, and that's why Olade is bringing back a little bit to life. I would say that Olade has 30 years now in the market. I would say that for the first 12 or 13 years, Olade was a good institution for its member countries. But for the next 15 or 10, it was put down aside because of the privatization process that went through. I mean, there was no use of the institution because no planning was needed, no looking of long-term was needed. Everything was done on a profitability basis, and we don't think that's right. We should have planning. We should have energy balances. We should know where we're going. We should be looking at long-term security of supply. So when I was called upon to run Olade, I told my ministers, I said, I need two things. I need political support, and I need you to pay your dues every year, timely, so I can run this institution. And so they're doing four, so I'm doing my job now in promoting the organization. I have a lot of visits here in Washington and different parts of the world, and we should make the institution valuable for the countries. Okay, we go to the next. So what are our goals on energy integration? Basically to support our member countries in development of legal frameworks. That is a mandate we have by sub-regions in order to develop natural gas and electricity infrastructure. Support to create and strengthen existing sub-regional regulatory, operating, and planning working groups. Consolidate and encourage investment in order to develop further infrastructure projects and consolidate energy integration. So we have taken a look, and this is a mandate. How are we going to operate, and how we're going to support the different processes? We're going to help whatever support there is to the Central American countries, including Colombia and Mexico, mainly for continuation of electricity common rules for that system to develop. I think it's moving slow, and Olade will join its ministers, will join its ministerial staff in order to continue with this effort. We don't know, but in CARICOM and including Venezuela, there is a couple of studies that are undergoing that with current oil prices, I mean, it's not a bad idea to take some natural gas in either way, liquefied or even piped to some of those islands there that are running their electric needs on diesel. So if you're running with a $13-$14 million BTU diesel, you can easily pipe $8 gas and contribute to develop that part. Also, the Andean community, as you know, we have a common set of rules. Decision 536 establishes all the rules for electricity integration, and we are working. And Chile has been included in this dialogue, and is working with us. And also, the Southern Cone market, that there is a bit conflictive. The Southern Cone countries do have a lot of more problems there on natural gas, mainly. As you can see, there is a lot of divergence over pricing, over security of supply. But I think they each need each other. Is that right? Yeah. And Brazil could not live with Bolivia. Bolivia could not live Brazil. Argentina could not live without Bolivia. And Bolivia could not live without Argentina. Chile could like to live without Bolivia, and Bolivia would love to sell its gas to Chile, but it can't. So there is a lot of political things down there, very, very strong political things. And we see some positive attitudes coming up. The relationship between Bolivia and Chile, as far as governmental issues, is moving ahead in the right direction, I would say. It's long term. I won't see anything happening this year or next year. But over the next 3 years, who knows, that there is a strong drive to heal the wounds. There we go. And I hope that happens, because that will bring benefits in energy integration that we really need it. And then, as you know, our presence, our also meet oftenly with a lot of discussions and a lot of things to say, but nothing is really moving in what is called the South American Community of Nations, which is the fifth region, which is the adding up of the Andean countries and the Mercosur countries. Go to the next. And this is the way we have strong links with our energy ministers, the five groups. There is Olave. We do have strong ties now with our, we have a coordinator in every single country. And through them, we're looking very strongly to tie in with banks, financial institutions, and other energy integration to make these rules that we need for energy integration. That's the only way they will be built. If there is no rules, no pipelines will be built, or no electric lines will be built, by, not even by the public sector, they will need it no matter what. So this is the mandate that we'll be giving, and to put work teams together in order to accomplish this thing that sometimes seems utopical in our Latin American countries, but we don't need to stop. We need to move it forward. Okay, now we go to the next one. And this is the just some of the activities we have developed. I would like to invite all of you and be watching that we have the Energy Week in Latin America, which will be held the last week of November in Medellin, Colombia. We expect to have 1,000 people. Last year we had about 400. In Mexico we expect to have 1,000. All our energy ministers will be present. And see, if some of you would like to know, you can visit our webpage. And we will have a declaration of the energy ministers, which will go to our presidents on some common thought. It might be security of supply with regard to ethanol. We don't know yet. We're discussing that. So we go to the next one, please. I was in Washington talking to the IDB. Go to the next one, please. Supporting some of the activities for each of the sub-regions. We're talking to the World Bank. We need funds to do it, and we need creative ways of supporting the sub-regional groups that we have developed. So that's the reason of my visit, and I've been very supportive of my initiatives at the Department of Energy, and that's one of the reasons I'm here. And with that in mind, we can go to the next one, please. It's the same. We have a proposed plan for every sub-region. I'll go to the next one, please. For CEPAC, that's Central America. Go to the next one. I don't know. And why is Olave important to the region? First, we're a neutral place for dialogue. Okay, we have direct contact with the energy ministers. They're very supportive of Olave. They know the value of it. We have the most complete official statistics of Latin America for the world. There is a strong shown ministerial and country decision towards promoting energy integration. And we are a neutral institution that can really help promote it through our energy ministers. In every single declaration that they make, Olave has been mentioned. So I think we can play a vital role, not only in promoting energy integration, but also in promoting dialogue when there is problems around the table, and when the countries face divergences or different ideas on energy issues, we can be there and support dialogue, neutral dialogue that is valuable for energy integration and long-term security of supply. Okay. I think with that, I'd like to thank you all of you for listening for a few minutes. And there's a lot more to talk about energy, and I'll leave that for the open discussion if you have any questions. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Rios. It was really wonderful to have you here and hear about your vision for the organization. I recently came here to the energy program at CSIS from the U.S. Department of Energy, where I first met Mr. Rios, and not too many months ago, and we were quite impressed with the degree of thoughtfulness that he brought to the understanding of having an energy organization in the region that not only tries to pool together data. Any of you who have looked for energy data on the region understand how having a common source with common units and common sources within ministries is important to that endeavor. And then also, you know, to being a place where ministers can come and talk through some of the energy choices that are facing their countries. And so we greatly appreciated your coming back to D.C. to talk to perhaps a wider audience and get their views on what they think about energy in the region and the role of your organization. So without much ado, I'll leave my questions for later and open the floor to anyone who has questions. I just ask that you please first introduce yourself and the organization that you're with, and then also please frame your question in the form of a question. So you can make comments, but please do have a question at the end. So does anyone want to start? Johanna?
Thank you. I just wanted to ask you a question. I'm Johanna Mendelson, CSIS. You've united the energy ministers, which is quite a miracle. Mm-hmm. But there's another group of ministers that will need to be brought into the mix, and I wondered how you were going to approach the agricultural ministers as the bio and renewable energy is spent there, because that is going to become, obviously, a challenge in standards.
Yes, indeed, biofuels have brought more difficulties into the table. I was a lot of people meeting with the IDB yesterday, and we do have a complete project developed for biofuels that we've been doing for a year. And the key complex to biofuels in I think in any country, but especially, is that you have more than one head. You have the agricultural head, you have the transportation head, you have the industry head, and it's not really in one hand. So yesterday, for example, we discussed with the IDB to work jointly on the biofuels in Latin America, that we will maneuver the energy side, the energy ministries on the one side, and the IDB would work with the other ones, because we basically have no relationship. Okay, or I mean, we could establish, but it's very difficult. So I think there is a good meeting yesterday. I had 14 people from the IDB that were looking at the plan we put together. They thought it was quite interesting. But I had the same question they had and the same question you have. There's more than just one ministry to develop, especially the biofuels, which I think the world has an overexcitement over it. I see that what Brazil has done is excellent, but it did it over 30 years. It didn't happen in one year or 2 years. And we see some of our countries, and I think the United States is not running away from that, is let's move towards it very quickly and let's do it. I think we need to watch a lot of things. First of all, is are we going to be able to, once we put the regulations in place, and if we say in every country we can run 50% on biofuels, and then what are we going to do with our crops? Are they enough for security of supply internally in terms of food? Are we going to drive inflation up? Because if the private sector goes with the ethanol, is that going to be exported, and prices internally from markets are going to be driven up for food? I mean, there's a lot of questions we need to ask when we're trying to change so drastically the energy matrix of the world. I think we need to be careful. We need to be watch Brazil, what they have done. But we need to take careful steps one by one of where we're going, not only as a regional level, but as a worldwide level.
Mike Miazala. There are some people who have been trying to promote or sell the theory of so-called peak oil. And according to the data from the Association of the Study of Peak Oil, the oil production in Mexico peaked in the year 2002, and the oil production in Venezuela peaked back in 1970. My question is, how is this theory, quote-unquote, received or perceived or discussed within your organization?
The oil theory peak, personally, I'm going to speak personally first, is that I think the world has plenty of reserves of conventional, non-conventional, deep, ultra-deep, very deep, and also some centaurs. They can pursue a different, a little bit more higher prices. I mean, if we go to the shales, or to the heavy oils that Venezuela has. I think Venezuela is one of the richest countries in the world as far as having conventional and non-conventional oil. And that's just a matter of pricing. So we should not be worried, I think, about the security of reserves. Is how are we going to put them to the surface? And secondly, how are we going to cope with our environment? And I hope the world works very, very keen on developing CO2 capture and sequestration and storage of CO2. I think that's keen, because we don't see a very very rapid shift towards our other energy fuels with much effort that we make. I think by 2020, 2030, we are going to see 80-85% of our energy world matrix still based on fossil fuels. And that is a trend. Whatever we do, I don't think it's going to happen miraculously. Technology has to work, and I don't think the peak oil is a worry. I think Mexico has plenty of reserves in the Gulf of Mexico. It's just a matter of more investment, whether from Pemex or whether from partnership with the international oil companies. There's plenty to do. Just look at the map, see the number of wells there are on one side, and go to the other side, there's nothing. So I don't think we're on a peak at a regional level, not at a worldwide level. I think we need to worry how we're going to extract it, produce it enough so we don't have constraints in refining or in shipping it around the world. And then that's solved. The second stage is, are we polluting too much? Are we really contributing too much to climate change? So I think carbon storage and sequestration is another way to go through to cope with the environment.
I'm going to take an opportunity to ask a couple questions. We had spoken.
Don't be too rough, please. We know Sarah.
We had spoken previously about, it's kind of a two-part question, about some of the other focuses for Olade over, you know, during your tenure, and you had spoken a little bit about biofuels, but you had also mentioned before energy efficiency and some other things to be done on that front. So if you could speak to that, that'd be great. And then in the beginning of your presentation, you talked about sort of striking a balance between the public and the private sector. How will Olade reach out to the private sector? I think the private sector in the region has had some struggles as of late, either with a bad reputation or not necessarily having the strongest of relations with national oil companies. And there's to a degree, there's a utility to having the private perspective in also with the ministry discussions and the expertise shared between the national oil companies. So how do you perceive Olade reaching out to the private sector as well as the public sector?
I told you not to be tough, but she keeps being tough, so we will answer. I think the first part, energy efficiency, is most of you live here or have been here on a long time in the United States, and you know that the private sector does everything, and just put the regulation in place, and the private sector is efficient enough to build more efficient refrigerators, more efficient light bulbing, and you put the codes and the buildings are. I mean, the private sector drives it. In Latin America, that's not the case. We have a different approach. Probably Mexico and Brazil have taken some steps towards energy efficiency as far as labeling equipment, as far as going into the transportation system efficiency. And most of our countries don't have codes for buildings, for example, as far as energy-efficient buildings. So we did a study last year. We finished a study that if we will apply what Mexico has done as far as their energy efficiency program, they have a very successful program, we think, called CONAE. And if we would apply just to the 5,000 cone countries and they would do the same thing, we could have savings of about $77 billion by 2018, just basic by applying basic things. And that could save a lot of money and save a lot of our environment and be good for the economies of the Southern Cone as well. So one of our programs is to build long-term energy efficiency programs within the ministries so we can create some institutionality and really help them save some money and also save the environment and also be more more economic on the on their competitiveness for a globalized world. So we do have that working in program, and we discussed that yesterday with the International Development Bank. We're also working with that. Shell last week has looked at our program, and as part of their social responsibility program, they're looking at some of our projects to help us move it through the region and through the energy ministries, because there is where needs start. So the energy efficiency program is not like the biofuels program, where the head of the any effort is based on the energy minister. Okay. Regarding the second question, is I think there's a lot of reflection we have to do it, and I will start with whatever happened in my country. That, as you know, we see it around the world as being unstable. Certainly is, but we see that from the private sector perspective, the changes in the rules were started by private companies. When they got into my country, they operated, and the first thing they did is they went from 20-year depreciation, they made it change 2 year layers down the road to one year depreciation. So they had accrued in their balances, and they were not paying profit tax. So when you look at what is happening in Bolivia, it's done a lot of changing of rules first by the private companies. They didn't comply with Article 30 of the law, which was say that you needed to drill a hole in each parcel that was discovered to keep the area. And they made it change how influencing on the government. And that was public known, and then the changes come on the other side and companies don't like it. So that's why we're saying that companies should ask, and as long as countries should provide stable legal framework for them to produce profits, and for them also companies should look at respecting the laws of the country. So I think that's the way the balance we're looking for, and I've been openly talking about this, and I think the experience of Bolivia is the experience of a lot of what happened in Latin America. We need to distribute the income that we get. If we get high pricing of oil, why not distribute that wealth a little bit? I mean, if you take it to one side, it's no good. If you leave a company with no profits, it's no good. So I think we need an equilibrium, and hope that a little bit answers the Tom company that no, we should not only blame one side. We should there's also to be a little bit on blame on the other side as well.
Can I ask a question? Bringing you back to your slide on Southern Cone Gas. I think you talked about the benefits of integration being $1, $2 versus export sales. There you go. Does that presume market pricing country to country? Because if the international, if the global LNG market is attractive and high, why wouldn't it be better for individual countries to export product rather than keep it in the region?
Every single deal there, it has its own problem, okay? This is independent of gas pricing. I mean, this is basically depending upon transportation cost. As you all know, gas has a problem because it's difficult to move it around because of its energy content. So what I would say is that to pipe gas from Bolivia to Argentina is beneficial to both of them. They can split the cost of that bringing it from overseas, the infrastructure. Okay, so they can benefit from royalties. They can benefit from having a better price than international price if they just integrate. And this is just has to be basically do with transportation costs, and they can split that difference and split those $90 billion but there's problems. Brazil is looking for some other independent because of the problems they had with nationalization. You all know Chile and Bolivia cannot dialogue, and there's a prohibition in Bolivian law to sell gas to Chile. And Chile has problems with Argentina. We got all sorts of political problems. Argentina and Uruguay have a problem over some paper mills now. So the Southern Cone is difficult, but we will not stop from telling this to our governors and to our people that if we don't integrate, we all lose. And we're going to ship those $90 million away to shipyards in Japan.
Thank you.
Yes, we had a lot of talks, and you know, Venezuela is a member country, and we went and listened to them, because when you see it on the press, you see it from a different way of how they're looking at it. If you can see, Brazil has to now think about moving gas from south to north. I mean, they're short of gas on Bahia, around the northern side of the country, because there's where they had some fields that are going dry or have decline in production. So the first step is to move some gas from wet gas that is going dry now from Venezuela to northern Brazil. Okay, so it's a project, first of all, step by step. It's not going to take just in once. So once Bolivian reserves are depleted or move towards depletion, because Argentina really does not have a lot of potential, big potential in the short term, and they do demand a lot of gas, then a pipe could be built further down into São Paulo areas. Okay, and this is strictly, I mean, we thought that the man should not be in the moon, but it was not done because of economic reasons. It was done because of political reasons. So a pipe like this could be easily could be a combination of economic and also political reasons for energy integration and long-term security of supply. So, I mean, the United States and Europe and some of the countries do a lot of things that don't have any economic reason, but you do it. And it's because some of these have to happen, and it tends to regional integration, and I think we should look at the same way the Venezuelans and the Brazilians are looking at it, and why not build a pipe step by step and have long-term security of supply, and Venezuela is not shipping its gas away, and Brazil is not bringing its gas in. So that's why the way it looks, because of the high gas demand, the scenario of the next 10, 15 years that we would have. So that is basically tries to answer a bit of it. Not necessarily everything has to be truly 100% profitable and economical. I mean, sending a man to the moon was not profitable at all, but it has other purposes, and certainly some of these things have that purpose as well when you think about it.
Nestor Iqueda, an AP reporter for Latin America. I have a question. It's a kind of a follow-up of the question that was raised by the CSIS member, and on the stable legal frame in South America for the oil industry or the energy industry. And you have already addressed the situation in Bolivia, but the trend is also seen in other countries like Venezuela and Ecuador, whose governments are announcing that they would take over or nationalize or expropriate the hydrocarbons industry. What is the Oladia's institution or yours as a person position on these new trends in South America?
First of all, I don't think it's just a Latin American trend. I mean, look at what is happening in Russia. Look at what happened in other places of the world. I mean, energy is becoming some sort of a strong drive for control, for not letting it be free, for having it's in my ground, it's mine. I will decide where it goes. I will decide at what price it goes and where it goes. That is that is the trend you see in the world. It's not just a country or a region. And based on that, if we go back to the second slide that we have, the vision that I do have and the countries have, I will speak with that, is that there will be no confiscation. There will be no company that stays there and makes no money and recuperates its profit. It's the only one of the trends that you will look at is we want to capture more of what this wealth is providing, and that's, I think that's where the drive is. It's not just towards we get you out of here, but we would like to negotiate with you, and we would like new terms, and that we will pretend that you stay, that you be profitable, but you will be socially responsible and distribute more when there is more to distribute. So I think that's the new trend. I don't see any country trying to really expropriate totally or just let it go from private investment. I think, and this is a very trendy thing all the way from Mexico down to Argentina. So I think it's more, I want more of the share of the pie. I want to keep you a stable legal framework, but if we have to change it, and if you still make money, we're gonna drive it more to where we share the profits more, or share the rent from the oil or the gas or the energy business a bit more. So that's where I see the region and the world standing. And like when I started the conversation, I said a bit that the world is with tight supplies. It's in difficult places to access it really freely. And or it's protected by the environment, or it's protected by its citizens or the countries that really want to take control of it. I mean, it's not free, disposable for any international oil company or to come and just exploit it freely. Okay, that is basically where the trend I think is. But by no way there is taking away of assets. Of expropriating plants or pipelines, and I think that's where a little bit the press has influenced a lot, and some of the energy companies majors have to say where is the a sailor should be in the sea, and the oil companies need to be where the molecules are, and they need to see at that region particularly if it's worthwhile going in there. But the sea is getting smaller every time. So, that's an analysis you have to make. A company needs to base when it goes into a country or a region.
Well, a follow-up, if I may. So you don't feel this trend is hurting the OLADI's purpose to create a stable legal frame in Latin America?
No, on the other hand, we believe that a stable long among the countries, because we're trying to promote rules if you have a gas line, you have a lot of terms you can include when you have three or more countries involved in common rules or grounds. So if you have that over the country, so the other, when one is trying to violate, the other protects, the other three protect the one that's trying to move away. So I think common rules, common regulations among the countries are good, because each other country tries to, they get together and they protect to the one that's trying to violate it, looking at what is happening in Russia. So by doing rules, we will providing more security of supply, more security for the investor.
Daniel Perner with the Organization of American States. I was wondering if OLADI considers how much consideration it gives to renewables, wind, solar, geothermal, other besides biomass, if it is a priority or not. And related to that, the priorities of OLADE are established by the member countries. Is it a board of directors within OLADE that establishes this? How does it go about this?
Yes, OLADE would like to get involved into everything possible regarding the energy sector, but we have limited resources and limited resources of human beings as well. So we have prioritized our work, and our work is centered with biofuels, which is very difficult, but what the lady said, it's difficult because you have a lot of interrelationship between the different institutions within a country. And secondly, is energy efficiency. Those are our two well-established programs at this time. We have made and we have talked to every country very much in detail. We have a web page. We have a networking of people in every country to work in energy efficiency and biofuels. Okay. Regarding that, solar, we're not looking at because we don't have time. We would love to do it, but we don't have time at this moment. Okay? And the other part of the question was regarding this. I have the Assemblea, the full member meeting once a year with all the member countries where we vote on these decisions that I've shown you. But four times a year, I had a board of a governing council that takes a look of what I'm doing, and that board is Brazil, Mexico, Colombia, Guatemala, and Argentina are on that board, and they tell me where to go and what to do, and most of it has been approved, and that is the way why I'm saying this is the way most of the countries, I would say all of the countries, think with regards to investment and to making rules more than just one country. I mean, to have common rules for electricity and pipeline construction mainly.
Why biofuel is there a specific reason why biofuels has been chosen as the alternative that you're considering, and that's it? Why only biofuels?
It's because when I came on board a year and 2 months ago, Brazil said this is the way to go, and we will take. And now we did a big seminar in Brazil for our governments. 4 days there, we brought everybody from the ministries, and we analyzed every single by case. But ever since, if you were 2 years ago, biofuels were. Now, in 1.5 years since we started this, it's become world deal and world issue. But a year and 2 months ago, you didn't see it very much, and so Brazil put it on the table, and we all agree that was very important, and I agree that it's very important, and that we should guide the energy ministers. But like I said, in every country, more than just the energy ministers are involved in this. I don't think that's the case. I think just countries want to receive more from their oil rent, and they would treat all of them equally. What they would like to see is companies, like I said, making profit, companies recuperating their investment. But if the price of oil goes to $100 a barrel, I mean, why would you like, as a country, be left over with $4 and somebody taking $76? I don't think that's a wealth... That's a good wealth distribution of the pie, and I think any Chinese company will be treated the same as an American or European company. They're all welcome in the same ground basis, as long as when they can pay more, pay a little bit more. And that's basically the trend, and we will not take away your assets. We want more of the pie. That's basically, if the pie is bigger, we want a little bit more of it.
Any other questions? I think we've got time for about one or two more. If not, I'll ask another one, but hopefully it's an easier one. When I was at the Department of Energy and when I worked with other ministries in the region, one of the key issues for us has always been public education about energy and the degree to which lawmakers and companies are beholden to people and their views about their energy resources and their understanding about where their energy comes from. And we're working at CSIS on a National Petroleum Council study that looks at some of these issues about not only geopolitics and perceptions about energy, but people's understanding about energy. And we've had some initiatives here in the United States and some people at the table who have started initiatives to get greater public understanding of policymakers, of companies, of people in general about where their energy comes from. Is that something that OLADE is looking at with any of your colleague organizations, or is that turning up as a priority for ministers in the region?
When you don't have good understanding of the industry, then it becomes all political and nothing economical or technical. And we would love to do that, but we're starting where we should, is starting to train and get more knowledge inside the people who are involved in the energy ministries of the member countries, regulatory bodies, through our video conference. That's what we're trying to do. Understand that gas is not oil, for example, that has a different approach of doing business, that gas needs long-term contracts and long-term security for investment, because there's a lot of things involved. And in some instances, in some of the ministries, they would think that gas is basically the same as oil. I mean, oil is a commodity. So basic things are just giving you an example of how we need to get started on capacity building within the ministries. And hopefully, they can in turn talk to their people inside the country, their population, so they understand the basic concepts of energy. so the themes don't become strongly political.
You spoke about the price impact and understanding that the premise is that if the price of oil goes up and the revenue that goes to the company, that the government should share a little bit more of that. Mm-hmm. Would that also hold true on the way down? If prices were to recede or go back down, would you expect that the government would initiate a change in contracts to give royalty relief or change taxation to keep investors whole?
I think the roads should be both ways. I think one of the things that should be placed in early regulation or in contracts, it should be that when the price is up and the volumes are high, you should have more taxes. And when prices are low and volumes are low, you should have lower taxes. And most of the regulations around did not include that. And I think it's very important that some of the regulations do include this clause windfall profit tax, I think you call that. It's that if you're high, and let me just give you the example of Bolivia very quickly. When it was privatized, it was expected that each well will flow about 300,000 cubic meters per day. You know how much each well flows? 1.2 million cubic meters per day. So it's four times. So you have more production at a higher pricing. Of course, the taxation system should have been to tax more. But then came that you had to have profit tax. But when you do accelerated depreciation inside the country and not for your house or your headquarters, then you're taking the big share of the pie at the beginning. Okay, it's just both ways. Well, yeah, I think always a third party, even in a marriage, is good. It's a matter of finding the right part, the right judge for your marriage. It's difficult to to be in between. But what I would say is I think the system should work on both sides. I mean, companies should not try to change the rule after they have come into the country, because there is always ways to do it, by talking to a minister or by talking to a president and changing the rules. That's very easy. And the other side goes when the population, because of protests, make it change the other way. Okay, so I think that is a problem, and that's where the situation is in Latin America. There is a little bit of distrust over how the companies operate, and also on the other side, the companies, there's not a lot of trust of how what is going to happen in that particular country, and we should work and make every effort possible to make that happen. That there's trust on both sides.
Okay, well, I think that's about all the time we've got today. I just want to, on behalf of the Americas Program and the Energy Program here at CSIS, thank you very much for coming in to speak with us, and thank our colleagues at the Department of Energy for pointing you in our direction as well. It was great to hear from you and about the region. I think we can all agree that you certainly have your challenges cut out for you, but we wish you luck and hope you'll keep in touch and come back and update us on your progress.
You're not going to wish me luck. You're going to help me.
I help you, okay. Thank you very much.